All right, good morning, everybody. Today is Tuesday, October 20th, 2015, and this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Tuesday, everybody. Yes, this is my first cup. I've had about four sips, so this should be a fun one. It is 56 degrees and very overcast and wet here in upstate New York. We had some good thunderstorms roll through. Oh, through the wee hours of the morning, and they actually were kind of nice. We got some heavy rain and lots of boomers over the lake. Anyone up in southern, southeastern Canada probably heard them as well. I was waving, saying, glad you had some thunderstorms. I love thunderstorms, and it won't be too long before those thunderstorms are memories, and those are big boomer snowstorms, so makes me happy that it was rain and not snow. All right, so where did we leave off yesterday? If we can get there, we titled the show Before the First Cup of Jewels, Bioeconomy, Billionaires, DNA, Hubris, and Immortality. And I think that was a pretty good description of the show. We took a look at this whole White House edict launching the bioeconomy for the United States in 2012 and how that really has kind of kicked off all this mad science gone mad funding and racing for the cure. So they think at the expense of you, me, Nana, and our children as guinea pigs, anything goes. The billionaires of Silicon Valley now financing a lot of this mad science research all in the name of, oh, we want to do good for the poor people of the world, but also in the name of we want to live forever, and it really is the race for immortality. So we ended the show yesterday with a story, and if I can get down there, I don't even know. 21st Century Cure, Blueprint in 10 minutes. I don't know. Oh, my God. Oh, Tech Titans. Yeah, Tech Titans' latest project, Defy Death. That's what it was titled. Out of the Washington Post. It was pretty disturbing because we saw the heads of Google and Facebook, Larry Page, and Zuckerberg, and Zuckerberg's wife, and Sergey Brin also, and his wife, and all these different people that were involved, the guy from Oracle too, that were involved in funding all of these different projects. Of course, they all had their own way that they were about trying to defy death. But something we're going to take a look at now is really what kind of spurred a lot of this. And what's forcing this train down the tracks, and that is the White House Precision Medicine Initiative. I had mentioned yesterday that there were all these different initiatives that kind of came around the same time period that sort of have been forming what is happening now, and that was the Bioeconomy Blueprint, the Electronic Medical Health Record Supercomputing Initiative, Mapping the Genome, the Big Brain Project, and then we also had this Precision Medicine Initiative, and they have just so amazingly orchestrated each one of these in succession, so it really has been like boiling frog. Like, no one has stood up and pointed going, bullshit, look what they're doing. And now that this is already far in motion, I don't know if we'll be able to stop this train. All right, so what is precision medicine? This is off of whitehouse.gov. It is, and I love the way they sell this crap, it is healthcare tailored to you. Woo-hoo. In his State of the Union address this year, this is 2015, Obama announced that he was launching the Precision Medicine Initiative, a bold new research effort to revolutionize how we improve health and treat disease. But until now, most medical treatments have been designed for the average patient. And oh, you are not average, 21st century American guinea pig. Oh, no, no. You have now become a cash cow, even more so than before. As a result of this one-size-fits-all approach, Treatments can be very successful for some patients, but not for others. Precision medicine, on the other hand, is an innovative approach that takes into account individual differences in people's genes, environments, and lifestyles. Now, here's the thing that nobody realized. All these tech titans were behind trying to find the longevity gene, trying to find immortality. And the only way that you're really going to be able to do that is a full understanding of the human genome and lots of experimentation. Well, since, like we've talked about before, biopharma has all these pesky rules with FDA and approval where they have to be in different trials, phase one, phase two, phase three, phase four. And those beginning trials are not allowed to be in people. They have to be in animals. And a lot of this technology, especially the RNAi, is thought to be unethical in regards to doing testing in humans without an emergency. They really had a problem on their hands. So with this precision medicine, again, they took that dangling carrot of the promise of technology, and they've gotten the desperate and the people who believe in the gods who are doctors to come together and now give their informed consent. See, the informed consent was the problem. We were not giving our informed consent if we didn't understand what they were doing to us. But if we understand that there's a technology out there that might cure our cancer or might fix Nana's Alzheimer's or Parkinson's, and we sign up for that study, we are willing participants in this. And so that's how they're getting around it. So we have billionaire funding from Silicon Valley financing now a lot of this research, with governmental edicts setting the stage and the framework, and getting players such as the National Institute of Health and the universities to play along. And wow, we got one big happy party. Anyway, back to this little White House story here. As treatment of this one-size-fits-all approach, treatments can be very successful for some patients, but not for others. And precision medicine, on the other hand, is an innovative approach that takes into account individual differences in people's genes, environments, and lifestyles. It gives medical professionals the resources they need to target the specific treatments of the illness we encounter, further develops our scientific and medical research, and keeps our families healthier. Whew, that's what we care about, keeping your family healthier. And if the White House says so, I'm all on board. Advances in precision medicine have already led to powerful new discoveries and several new treatments that are tailored to specific characteristics, such as a person's genetic makeup or the genetic profile of an individual's tumor. And, you know, here's one other thing not to forget. We now have this 21st Century Care Act that's being steamrolled through Congress, and that's going to just drop the drawers of the FDA to get this even rolling faster. There aren't going to be any waiting a year or two for the FDA to drag their feet, they say, and approve this newfangled treatment. No. You can do, like I said yesterday, direct-to-consumer from researchers to stand up and be first in line for their new clinical study on the general public. Anyway, so they can look now at specific characteristics. Of course, we know that they are databasing everybody's genetic data. Lots of people are stupidly giving it up and saying, yes, you can use it for research when they sign up for 23andMe's Ancestry division. There are also lots of the universities who are doing studies for different things that are collecting information and requesting that individuals give them the checkbox to give the go-ahead to use for research as well. So there's not only large amounts of genetic data that's already out there that they're manipulating and playing with, but now they're going to want you to also give up your genetic data as part of your healthcare plan, so it can be sliced and diced and put into your dossier in the big data database. Anyway, all right, says this helps transform the way we can treat diseases such as cancer. Remember, cancer was that dangling first carrot that they promised the promise of future medicine. We're going to cure your cancer. I know we've been trying to for 40 or 50 years now, but we think we finally got it. Come on, step up. Since a large majority of Americans are now cancerous tumors walking around from all the garbage that corporate America has fed you, we have the cure, Problem Reaction Solution. Patients with breast, lung, colorectal cancers, as well as melanomas and leukemias, for instance, routinely undergo molecular testing as part of patient care, enabling physicians to select treatments that improve chances of survival and reduce exposure to the adverse effects. And we are committed to protecting your privacy every step of the way. Yes, that's another thing that nobody is really talking about, and I have a story about that. You know, we see data breaches left, right, and sideways. Mysteriously, over the last 2 years, they've just been off the hook. That then caused Obama to pull cyber patrol together between corporate America, all of the Silicon Valley heads, and the federal government under one big cyber bill to keep our infrastructure safe. So, you know, they can't even keep their private federal employee records safe. I don't remember what the huge number was, but there were hundreds of thousands of names, numbers, addresses, social security numbers, security clearances of federal employees that were all breached. And I just saw recently now there's threats against military members and stuff, that they went in and caught some hacker out of some Islamic state that had their hands on that data. But I mean, they can't even keep the federal employee database safe, down to like who's a undercover CIA operative, and we're going to trust them with our genomics data in the cloud. And yes, it is all going to be in the cloud. That's what big data in the cloud are about. Anyway, it says, we are committed to protecting your privacy every step of the way. And the White House is working with the Department of Health and Human Services and other federal agencies to solicit input from patient groups, bioethicists, and we're going to talk about that as well, privacy and civil liberty advocates, technologists, and other experts to help identify and address any legal and technical issues related to the privacy and security of data in the context of precision medicine. Yes. And so this was written in January 2015 before some of those high-profile hacks happened. Wonder how they're going to address it now. What is the Precision Medicine Initiative? Well, to enable a new era of medicine through research, technology, and policies that empower patients, researchers, and providers to work together toward development of individualized treatments. And notice how they don't mention regulatory agencies or keeping you safe in that statement. Because it's not about keeping you safe. Remember, none of this is about keeping you safe. And now they're using this whole precision healthcare and bioeconomy blueprint was about bringing entrepreneurs together. Remember, that's what it said. To build the United States economy again and have the dollars falling from the sky. And you are the product, my dear people. Okay. The future of precision medicine will enable healthcare providers to tailor treatment and prevention strategies to people's unique characteristics, including their genome sequences, their microbiome composition. We've talked a lot about microbiome and the connection between gut and brain and to your the health of your immune system. And microbiome is something that they're trying really hard to crack. So pay attention to that one. They also want to know all about your health history, your lifestyle, and your diet. And remember yesterday we also talked about the connection between big data, big tech and the tech companies, and wearable mobile devices, and how they are using those already to bag, tag, and track not only where you're going, but how much you're exercising, what you're eating, what you're buying. what your metabolism is doing and your heart rate. And every day there's going to be more information with algorithms that they are able to scrape off of those devices and get a real-time stream for humans all over the world. It says to get there, we need to incorporate many different types of data from metabolomics, which are the chemicals in the body at a certain point of time. And I told you that we had read something out of Google Calico about how they literally would be reading your sweat when you had one of those Google Calico devices on your wrist to get the chemical composition to see what's going on in your body right now. I mean, literally, we are talking about mass invasiveness 24/7 in the future. So anyway, from metabolomics, which are the chemicals in the body at a certain point in time, the microbiome, which is your collection of microorganisms in or on the body, and data about the patient collected by healthcare providers and patients themselves. And the success will require that this health data is portable and can be easily shared between providers, researchers, and most importantly, patients and research participants. And bing, bada, bing, portable healthcare, that is the medical health records. All right, tell us about your activities to support and advance the Precision Healthcare Initiative. So the White House right now has something going on, and it looks like they might have just had it in September 21st of 2015. It's already October, if you could believe that, people. Where is 2015 gone? But it says, we are looking to a broad range of stakeholders to learn about new or expanded initiatives and programs aimed at enabling new ways to improve health and treat disease, and always use this information to inform our precision medicine efforts going forward. I mean, it is all stops out, people. Anybody wants in, man, you are in. And one of the things I keep seeing here is that they want people to develop APIs, which are basically the little hooks to be able to build applications that access this data. And we had seen probably a few months ago, there already was an entrepreneur that was looking at building applications to go into the Google App Store that would put, they would give you free DNA tests. And I think we saw that DNA tests are down to like $100 a pop. So he would give you that for free to have access to your data. And then this entrepreneur was going to have someone build him little applications that would do things like scan your genome for cancer keys and scan your genome for, you know, whether or not you have autism or some sort of BRCA gene, and then scan your, and every time it would be a fee. So $2.99 or $4.99 to find out if your genome has a, you know, tendency to have blue eyes or whatever. And this is how he's going to market it. And that's fully 100% legal. You give your full consent. And the White House now is also looking for someone to develop robust APIs for the electronic medical health record system that will help patients as well as clinicians in accessing their donated research data. So how great is that? So guys, this is like Mangala white coats with the big googly glasses and the bright lights in your eyes, and they have the white face mask on so you can't see who they are. I get nightmares about this stuff, and I mean, that is no exaggeration. This is the stuff that nightmares are made of, and I do not believe that in the future any of this at all is going to end up being voluntary. Maybe right now to get us acclimated, but in the days of our children, I don't think so. All right, so here's another story. The evolution of precision medicine says it is about much more than genomics. And if my page will scroll, we'll be able to read this. All right, here we go. This story was actually from today, believe it or not. October 20th, 2015, out of U.S. Health News. The hospitals of tomorrow. Precision medicine is on the cutting edge of healthcare, technology, and controversy. And the idea of using a patient's biological information to improve and tailor treatment has gone from niche to mainstream. Yes, in the blink of an eye. with President Obama calling for $215 million investment in precision medicine during his State of the Union address in January. But as the practice gains popularity, experts point out a number of issues that the medical community has yet to tackle. And we found out not only was there $215 million of federal dollars that was donated, and that's really paltry compared to everything else, but we have all of these tech titan billionaire giants now donating money to all these different areas of this same initiative. It says, while the cost of sequencing the genome hovers around $5,000, and I'm going to call bullshit on that because we've seen a few recent stories that just came out looking at CRISPR and the gene drives that said it was right around $100 now. But it has been a market decrease because it was down from $95,000 in the early 2000s. The genetic info gleaned from the sequencing needs to be analyzed, interpreted, shared, and stored. And that is where the White House now is calling for people who do things like we do. Build front-end interfaces to big data to make it easy to read and correlate. I'm not helping you, White House. Not at all. Anyway, that means precision medicine is about far more than simply crafting a personalized cure. It involves big data, privacy issues, drug development, and finding a way to pay for it all. Dr. Jeffrey Ginsberg, founding director for the Center for Applied Genomics and Precision Medicine at Duke University's Medical Center, Dr. Elizabeth McNally, director of the Center for Genetic Medicine and a professor in the Departments of Medicine and Biochemistry, Molecular Biology, and Genetics at Northwestern University's Feinberg School of Medicine. Holy crap, that was a mouthful. And Dr. Barrett J. Rollins, chief scientific officer at the Dana-Farber Cancer Institute and the Lind Family Professor of Medicine at the Harvard Medical School, spoke about precision medicine Monday, which must have been yesterday, during the 2015 U.S. News and World Report Hospital of Tomorrow conference in the nation's capital. Well, who would have thunk it that that was happening in D.C. yesterday? Boy, weren't we right on topic without even knowing it. This session, called the Precision Medicine Revolution, was monitored by U.S. News and World Report managing editor Lila M. Alphonse. Quote, the genetics application to medicine is not something that's completely new, says Ginsberg, pointing out that the term pharmacogenetics was actually coined in 1959. But since then, the field has changed, going from one that's very genome-based to one that is more healthcare and healthcare system-based, he said. All kinds of information are having an impact on how patients are diagnosed and treated, he explained. In addition to genomic sequencing, advanced therapies, mobile health, e-health, learning health systems, patient engagement, big data and analytics all have big roles to play in precision medicine. And yeah, mobile health is something else that we have talked about on different shows. And they're talking about now there's a mobile device that can diagnose schizophrenia just from you talking into it. There were a couple other, and I don't remember what they were, but we had a couple pretty whacked out. PTSD, I know they were doing some diagnoses. We now have our mobile psychiatrist. And there were some other oddities that they were working on. And one of the things I want to talk about, too, is using mobile devices as sensors. Now, you know, since 2001 with 9/11, when they started talking about bioterror attacks, and we know we heard Tim Kelly's show this week was a professor out of Canada, I believe, who was looking at the anthrax attacks of 2001 and showing really the connection. And we talked about this as well. We didn't hear much about it, but we had anthrax getting lost all over the globe again. And we had looked at back in 2001 when that was kind of the beginning of the fear of bioterror. Well, that was under George Bush's reign. And that was where this whole Project BioShields happened, the fear of bioterror. Let's get biopharma now to come up with all these mad science gone mad drugs to protect us in the event of a bioterror emergency. But how are we going to be able to tell if there's a bioterror emergency? Oh, we have to make all these little itty bitty sensors and stick them all over telephone poles in New York City that are real time doing decoding of what is in the air and sending information back. And that was really kind of the first big test of something that I would say would be as similar to smart dust as we had back in those days. Very miniaturized, and maybe even by this point, nanoscale, I don't know where they're at with that, sensors that can send back real-time data of environment. Well, now they have all kinds of great little apps and cards that can plug into your phone that turn your phone into a biosensing unit, so they can actually, you know, you can probably spit on your phone by now and have them do a diagnosis. But we'll, if we have time, we'll get there. Time is already slipping by quickly. Anyway, back to this. When we talk about precision medicine with respect to genetics, McNally explained, we're talking about advances since 2007, which is when we started generating massive amounts of sequencing, and we started to appreciate for the first time just how genetically variable we all are from one another. So interesting, that was 2007, right before the selected one, Obama, was slipped into his seat, and all hell has pretty much broken loose with this stuff ever since then. A cardiologist, McNally, points out that in the areas of heart failure and arrhythmia, doctors now know that there are many families that carry genetic risk for developing heart problems, and they use that information for managing those patients. And I don't know, there's like this big Q&A section that we're probably not going to get into. So there was a big conference in DC apparently yesterday, and it is going, well, it's ending today, Washington, DC, October 18th to 20th, 2015, Renaissance Downtown Washington, DC, Hospital of Tomorrow Conference. All right, if I can get to this next story. This is out of Popular Science. Should you trust Big Pharma with your DNA? And people just buy into this shit. The subheading to this is, privacy may be a small price to pay for your personalized medicine. Privacy? How about invasiveness into every single cell of your body where they can turn functions required for life on and off with the flip of a switch? Yeah, privacy. That should not be the top of your concerns. In January, and again, 2015, right when Obama announced his precision medicine initiative. It's just amazing how all of these things correlate. Yes, in January, the biotech company Genentech, and I'm pretty sure we've looked at them before in regards to some other genomics breakthroughs. I don't know if it was Ebola or one of these mad science gone mad vaccines. The biotech company Genentech reportedly committed $10 million for access to the DNA of 3,000 Parkinson's patients and their families. And remember, one of the big tech titans put hundreds of thousands of dollars, millions of dollars, actually hundreds of millions. And I don't remember who it was, but it was right toward the bottom of the end of the story from yesterday about the tech titans, because he has Parkinson's in his family and he was fighting for the cure. So anyway, they did Genentech $10 million for 3,000 Parkinson patients and families' DNA. And a week later, Pfizer made a similar deal for the genomes of 5,000 people with lupus and at least 11 more similar transactions are on the way, deals which in the private genomics company 23andMe stands to profit by commodifying its customers' biological identities. So there you go. You know how many times I've talked about software as a service, and once they had us in a database, they were going to be selling it for $29.95 a month to these biotech companies who no longer have to do their own research and development. It gets rid of that line item. Their accountant got out the eraser and erased that from the balance sheet. And now it's just a monthly fee that you're going to pay to a data collection service such as 23andMe that has free, and actually not even free, they had people pay them to take their genetic data and run a sequence on it and then check the little box that said, yes, you can use me for medical research, which means that 23andMe has access to your data for free that they are now profiting from all these big pharma companies subscribing to your data as a service. Anyway, back to the story. It says off the bat, that sounds pretty creepy, offering up genetic information to the highest bidder. And it is creepy. It's sort of like what Google does with your whereabouts and your searches. Absolutely is. They sell it to the highest advertiser bidder to know what you're talking about in your house and what you're searching and what you're getting emails about. Oh, look, here's someone talking about going to the Philippines. Well, let's advertise with a Philippines ad. It says the thing is, selling or volunteering personal information may just transform medicine. A trove of data could give scientists the tools that they need to develop gene-specific drug therapies for certain diseases. And remember, too, when we did that in-depth on 23andMe, we discovered, and that, mind you, the woman who is CEO of that company is the wife of Sergey Brin, co-founder of Google. But we found out that 23andMe was also forming another division, and that wasn't going to be just collecting genomics, but it actually was going to be developing medicines that specifically go after genetic issues. So they're going to have a whole drug development division as well. It says, anyway, a trove of data could give scientists the tools that they need to develop gene-specific drug therapies for certain diseases. Quote, we are hoping to ultimately develop Parkinson's medicines, for example, that actually modify the disease as opposed to just treating symptoms. And yes, that's going into your DNA and flipping switches, said Genentech's Nadine Pinnell. Analyzing patterns in DNA could also help scientists find the genetic markers that trigger disease, making preventative care more individualized and effective. Even the White House is getting on board. In February, this is February, but it was actually January, President Obama announced the $215 million Precision Medicine Initiative. Maybe that's when he announced the funding, which aims to compile genetic information from 1 million volunteers. And we found out he got his 1 million volunteers. They partnered with the National Institute of Health, and the National Institute of Health partnered with who? Oh, 23andMe. For all their volunteers that checked that box, who said you could use my data for scientific research. Ultimately, Obama says, this is the possibility of not only helping us find new cures, but also helping us create a genuine healthcare system as opposed to just a disease care system. And he is right about that disease care system. That is all it's about. When you go to your doctor and you're sick, your doctor doesn't start asking you about your nutritional deficiencies or doing blood tests to see what your blood is low in. No. First thing they do is start inking you a prescription for something, some new poison that's going to cause some new malady and destroy some new body part, liver, kidneys, or otherwise. It's all about masking the symptoms, not finding a cure. But this, with the government and this collusion between billionaires and universities and lunatics running the show, this is not the answer. Anyway, back to this. As with any modern data business, and yes, this is a business. Remember, Obama said this is entrepreneurial. Privacy is a concern. And even a small segment of DNA in 23andMe looks at 750,000 base pairs out of 3 billion can reveal a history of illness or predict future risks and be used Maury style to identify baby daddies. But Dave Kaufman, program director at the National Human Genome Research Institute's Division of Genomics and Society, says that those worries are far-fetched. What, are you kidding me? They're far-fetched. Don't worry about it. We've had these big data breaches left, right, and center. Everything's going into the cloud, and whoops, we've lost it already. But don't worry about it, because those worries are far-fetched. We got this big cyber patrol center going now that we're pulling the bag shut, pulling businesses and big data and tech companies and government and healthcare and everyone all under one big roof, and putting people like DARPA and all of their DARPA X technologies in charge with the beginnings of Skynet, their Sentry system that's going to scan the outsides of the internet and keep it safe and launch its own attacks without any intervention whatsoever. Yeah, don't worry about it. We'll take care of it. As I get a letter from my insurance company about a month ago now, stating that the insurance company's had a big data breach and whoops, my whole family's information has been stolen. And who the hell knows what they got? They're like, well, at least they got your name, your address, your social security number, and I don't know, any data that we held on you. What? Any data that my insurance company held on me? Yes, that was all compromised, but don't worry about it. We'll keep your genomics information safe. So anyway, this dude says, yeah, those worries are far-fetched. Research materials remain anonymous and closely guarded, although data breaches like the one in February suffered by health insurer Anthem, and it wasn't Anthem, it was another one, punch a hole in consumer confidence, and they most certainly do. Legislation offers some protection, too. Oh, yes, like legislation's ever helped anybody. In 2009... the Genetic Information Non-Discrimination Act makes it illegal for employers or health insurance companies to discriminate based on genetic data, except that we found something back when we were digging into 23andMe that there was some sort of loophole in there where one of the insurance companies, I don't remember who it was, but it wasn't health insurance, but it was life insurance, I believe, actually could discriminate against you for some of your genetic data. We might have to look into that, because I remember when we read that part, I read it twice because I was very surprised about that. Anyway, this says it makes it illegal for employers or health insurance companies to discriminate based on genetic data. They don't mention life insurance, though. Notice that. The act doesn't address, though, who controls your data once it's out of the bag, but more policy is sure to arrive soon. I wonder if that's what they were talking about at that conference in New York or in Washington, D.C. over the last 2 days. And while the White House initiative will certainly have plenty of security experts on the payroll, right, they just brought all of the tech titans, big data tech titans under the government umbrella, including Microsoft and their cyber patrol center, and now they have them all on the job. Perhaps the most compelling reason to embrace DNA sharing is that people don't seem at all distressed about giving up their data. No, because they've groomed an entire generation of narcissists who are addicted to their mobile devices through dopamine, who share every second of their lives on social media without discretion. Like, I took a shit 5 minutes ago, and now I'm eating my breakfast of oatmeal, and here's a picture, and now my dog is eating the toe jam out from between my toes. Look at how cute Rover is. I mean, there is no, and then that stupid thing that people have where they check into places. I mean, have you ever seen someone check in? Like, do I care that you're at the boudoir getting a makeover? No, I don't. And I don't want to see that. I don't want to see what you're having for breakfast. But that's normal to an entire generation of people. And that's by design. Anyway, perhaps the most compelling reason to embrace DNA sharing is that people don't seem at all distressed about giving up their data. 80% of 23andMe users have already opted to make their genomes available for study, and that's checking that little box. Whether they understand the fine print on what they're signing away is up for debate, and that's very true, except that, guess what? You gave informed consent regardless of whether or not you read the fine print. Once you checked that box, you said, do whatever you want with it because I'm giving it to you for free. But most people, especially those with genetic disorders in their families, probably know that they have more to gain from potential discoveries than they have to lose from unlocking their biological identities. You know, and it's pretty disturbing when we see stories such as one that we read the other day out of Science Alert titled "Scientists Map Genes That Extend Life by as much as 60% if deleted as researchers reach for the delete key." I mean, I don't think people realize the power of what they are unleashing by giving up all of this data to researchers. I mean, this is all about the quest for immortality. And we talked yesterday, and there were questions about what happens when there's six simultaneous generations of humans living when they crack the cure for aging, right? They're going to cure aging as a disease. And the end answer to that is there won't be six generations living, because that's where all the eugenics comes in. There will be no more reproduction when you can live to be 529, okay? You won't be having children, because we, according to the new world that we have that's being created here in front of our eyes by these scientists who've now dubbed themselves gods, our environment will not be sustainable with six generations of humans, right? So Agenda 21, 21st century Buck Rogers is going to roll in with the white shirts, and it'll all be about nutraceuticals, taking care of yourself, making sure you don't do anything crazy, keep you medicated and smiling, and you can live forever pursuing higher level thinking skills, according to Kurzweil. All right. Speaking of Kurzweil, here's a story that came out in 2013 out of the MIT Technology Review, and it actually had an LOL in the title, which caught my attention, that MIT, where they, Eric Drexler invented nanotechnology, and they're working on all kinds of mad science gone mad, that they put an LOL in the title of Google trying to solve death. A new company launched by Google will seek to extend human lifespans. And this is about Calico. And now remember, Alphabet is the parent company of all this. Says a joke about Silicon Valley is that entrepreneurs always seem to be focusing on problems facing people of their own age. And that is why young programmers have endless ideas for websites that will tell them what bar to hang out in. And then in middle age and with marriage, it is on to inventing fertility apps. And eventually, as your hair goes gray, you have to fix death itself. Well, today, and this was September 18th of 2013, Time Magazine broke the news that Google and its CEO, Larry Page, are funding a company that will try to extend human lifespan and solve the disease of aging. The Weekly's newsstand cover asks, in huge letters, can Google solve death? And we found out by that other story we were reading yesterday that it's not just Larry Page, it's a whole bunch of them. And they're all on board with Peter Thiel, the founder of PayPal, financing now as venture capitalists all these new mad science companies. So it's pretty obviously, and this is in 2013, so wow, isn't the joke on MIT Technology Review, Google isn't going to solve death. But what is interesting is that Page, now 40, and Google think that they have the hubris that they might. And it goes on and on and on, talks about all these Google ventures, and it's a very long story, and we did a lot of that yesterday. But what I want to get into connecting to Google is now Kurzweil, because we know that Google brought Kurzweil into the helm of its engineering division, made him the head of the engineering division, and Kurzweil is probably the world's most lunatic transhumanist. For as long as I've known, he's been talking about the singularity and becoming one with the machine, being able to upload your brain to the cloud and to be able to live forever. So to put Kurzweil as the head of Google's engineering, bring in Regina Duggan, a director from DARPA, in the middle of all that, and then have the CEO, Larry Page, talking about forming Calico and finding out ways to cure death, and you have Sergey Brin, the co-founder of Google, with his wife, and I don't ever remember her name, the CEO of 23andMe, working on all this genomics data. You definitely can see that there is a plan behind all of this. It's very scary because it's Google, but Google is not evil, right? That was their tagline. All right, so here's a story that'll stitch it all together. The dawn of human 2.0. Nanobot implants could soon connect our brains to the internet and give us godlike super intelligence, scientists claim. And guess who that scientist was? I'll give you one guess. This is a brand new article, came out a couple weeks ago, October 2nd, 2015. Bullet points. A computer scientist says that nanobots could connect our brains to the cloud. You know, they're getting closer to that than you even know. This allows people to back up their memories and communicate by thoughts. Yes, they're already doing that as well. They had that first experiment where they were able, they're calling it the brain net, to be able to put multiple brains together over the internet and have them transfer and share thoughts. It also could help expand human creativity and emotions, he claims. And yes, that's what Kurzweil thinks, is that once we have escaped death and all the things that task us right now, we will be allowed to live in peace and harmony and use our brains for higher level thinking, such as the arts and music. Says, but some scientists doubt that we can advance to that level. Well, we'll see, as they're planning 2015 to be the first human testing for nanobots to cure cancer. Says the human brain could be enhanced by tiny robotic implants that connect to a cloud-based computer network to give us godlike abilities, according to a leading computer scientist. Ray Kurzweil, an author and inventor who describes himself as a futurist who works on Google's machine learning project, said that such technology could be the next step in human evolution. He predicted that by 2030, humans will be using nanobots capable of tapping into our neocortex and connecting us directly to the world around us. And remember, we've looked at that augmentation, an augmented reality, augmented cognition. It isn't going to be a mobile device in the future. It is going to be directly connected to your brain from birth. That's what some are postulating. Learning along with you to be your personal digital assistant inside your head and augmenting your brain to help you remember things, set your appointments, and connect you to the cloud instantaneously. Speaking at an event organized by Singularity University at Moffett Field in California, which he helped found, which, yeah, that's Kurzweil's group is called Singularity University, Mr. Kurzweil said that they could expand our capacity for emotions and creativity as well. He said that this ability to expand our brains with the information held in the cloud will combine with the power of artificial intelligence to make humans more godlike. And like I've been telling you, that is the fatal flaw. We are not ready to be gods, people. We do not have the moral fortitude or the ethical backbone to be like gods. And we are taking what is biological and bastardizing it into the synthetic. It's going to be the destruction of biology 1.0 on planet Earth. And don't take this very lightly. People are embracing this technology because it's going to be the promise of living forever. Well, do we really want to live forever? Is it about living forever? Because I don't think it is. I think that some of the stuff we read yesterday about what kind of motivation are you going to have to do things and accomplish things if there isn't an expiration date on you is a very good question. We could sit around and be lazy all day and not have to do anything because it's not going to matter because it'll never end. But according to Kurzweil, we are going to be able to expand the neocortex, and so we are going to become more godlike. I don't know. Anyone who aspires to become more godlike, I think, has a screw loose, in my own personal opinion, as well as control issues and probably a little bit of narcissism thrown in for good measure. Probably a little psychopath, too. It says, we are going to add additional levels of abstraction and create more profound means of expression. So we are going to be more musical, and we are going to be funnier, and we are going to be sexier and be better at expression and more loving sentiments. I mean, what? Is that the reason to live forever, Kurzweil? I mean, what? Talk about a crack-a-hooey bullshit. It's ridiculous. We are not going to do that. We're going to sit around and be bored. And well, I mean, here's the thing. If you're drugged up 24/7 living in a white room and they got you living in your own little world inside your brain, in like a holodeck of the brain or something, maybe it's going to be like literally the Matrix. You're going to be jacked into something and there won't be any physical reality anymore because you'll either be in some sort of suspended animation floating in a Mars ship or Earth, 100-year Earth in space searching for a new planet that isn't as screwed up as this one. Or you're going to be just in a warehouse somewhere living out your immortal existence inside the cloud in your head, interacting with others at some sort of non-physical level. I mean, talk about horrifying. He added that it may be possible in the future to use the extra brain power provided by the cloud to multiply human intelligence. And don't think that this is all fantasy. They already have had tests of doing the brain net, where they are connecting multiple brains over the internet. He said in the 2030s, if he met Google co-founder Larry Page, for example, in the street, the technology could provide some assistance. He says, so I'm walking along and I see Larry Page coming and I think, I better think of something clever to say. But my 300 million modules in my neocortex isn't going to cut it. I need a billion in 2 seconds, so I will be able to access that in the cloud, just like I can multiply intelligence with my smartphone thousands of fold today. The concept of nanomachines being inserted into the human body has been around in science fiction for decades. In Star Trek, tiny molecular robots called nanites, and yes, they were used to help repair damaged cells in the body. And Mr. Kurzweil says that similar robots, could be built out of DNA and injected into the brain. And believe it or not, they're working on that now. First human testing in 2015. Last year, researchers injected a package of DNA. And yes, here's another one of those horrifying tests that would unfurl under certain conditions into bodies of cockroaches. The DNA origami were described as being the first step toward building basic robots that perform logical operations when they encounter specific proteins, much like a 1 or 0 from a silicon microchip. And I have on my Before the First Cup Facebook page, there is a movie of that origami nanobot of it actually moving, opening, and closing. The more DNA robots injected into an animal, the greater the complexity can be achieved. And the researchers from Bahrain University are now working to scale up the computing power so that it rivals 8-bit computers from the 1980s like the Commodore 64. And I want to talk about that because we only got a few minutes left. But amazingly enough, that was one of the other stories that I had queued up. Was out of this Bahrain University in Israel. This professor, what was his name? Ido Bachelet of Bahrain University, who formerly worked for the Weiss Institute at Harvard, where they were working on that origami for the robo-bees. So how interesting is that? Announces that in 2015, they are going to be doing the first human trial on a leukemia patient who is very near death with nanobots to try to kill cancer. And even more amazing than that is that I found another story from May of 2015 where good old Pfizer, yes, Pfizer who jumped onto precision medicine, Pfizer is now collaborating with Ido Blanchett at Bahrain University on DNA nanorobots. So how incredible is that? I'll read this headline. Pfizer is cooperating with the DNA robot laboratory managed by Professor Ido Blanchett at Bahrain University. Blanchett has developed a method of producing innovative DNA molecules with characteristics that can be used to program them to reach specific locations in the body and carry out pre-programmed operations there in response to stimulation from the body. Now let's hop over to this other story because I'm running out of time. Nanobots to kill cancer in the first human trial, March 20th, 2015. It's worked in multiple live cell cultures, in cockroaches, and in animal testing. And now for the first time, a human being will be injected with DNA-based nanobots that will, if all goes well, seek out and rid a cancer patient of the malignant cells that are set to kill him in less than 3 months. And with the new technology being applied here, the patient could see a total permanent reversal with no damage to neighboring cells. The human trial is being led by who? Oh, Ido Blanchett. Yes, that same Ido Blanchett of Israel's Bahrain University and formerly of Harvard's Weiss Institute. And there we go. We stitched it up. All right, guys, make sure you stick around. It's Tuesday, Mr. Kevin Blanch up next. Stick around tonight. Lots of live radio. All right, it's awesome.